Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome in to Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you for making us a part of your day. I gotta say, I really appreciate the kind words that a lot of you have shared on investingsimplifiedradio.com as well as via email. We are doing our best to bring you content that is applicable to you, stuff that is interesting, and just trying to keep it real here for you during this, you know, time of quarantine. We've got a global pandemic. I think we're, what, 4 months in now? Just something crazy where we've had, you know, to be stuck at home. A lot of folks are not allowed to go back to work, even as we start to get back to work a little bit. I really appreciate you tuning in and your support. We really appreciate hearing from you. If you have questions that you want to have covered, until we are able to be back into the studio taking phone calls, you know, the best way to get those in is investingsimplifiedradio.com or pop me an email, askbo@pfgwm.com. You can also visit our website, pfgwm.com. We have a newsletter sign up on there. A lot of folks really like to hear just what we see going on in the markets on a weekly basis. It's also got some fun stuff, you know, included in there, some fluff that, you know, to take away from the, you know, just the harsh realities that is the roller coaster that is the market over the last, you know, couple of months. And it just, it, you know, it continues on as we move on into this pandemic, as we hear news come out. And the hard part for me, when people ask, what's the market going to do? How is the market going to perform? What should I invest in? Because in all honesty, if I'm being intellectually honest, I will tell you that I don't know what the market's going to do, what, you know, what's going to happen in the markets. I don't know what's going to come out, you know, in terms of social commentary, in terms of news that comes out internationally or domestically. It is pretty much impossible for me to know exactly what is going to happen. And, you know, anybody who says they know what's going to happen is just lying, or maybe they believe they know, but they just don't. You know, we've heard for years and years since the Great Recession, but increasingly in the past couple of years, you hear terms like the yield curve inversion, that, hey, interest rates are going to go up. We're going to have raised interest rates. That didn't happen. You know, nobody saw the black swan that is the coronavirus, the coronavirus coming here to our shores. There's, you know, I know that in the news I've read and heard that there's another potential coronavirus that they're worried about coming from pigs, that may have originated over in Asia again. You know, there are, you know, things that are always going to come out of the woodwork to possibly derail your plan. You know, I like to think about it, you know, you think about it like you have a plan, you're driving, you know, down the road, you don't know what's going to come at you, if there's going to be an accident, if there's going to be construction, if the road's going to be closed, you know, to use that road closure, you know, sort of analogy like we have with this COVID-19 situation. So it can be really difficult to navigate on your own. And what a lot of people have really liked is to be able to sit down, we can go over a plan, and at least if you get an idea of where you're trying to go, it can make you feel a lot better. And what the feedback that I've gotten from folks that have sat down with me and my team is, hey, you just made us feel a lot better about where we are and where we're looking to go. Because I got to tell you, so many times when I sit down with people and we talk through, you know, what they're going through. We talk through what they've saved. A lot of people don't realize how good of a job they've really done. And you really need to take a step back and give yourself credit, right, for the fact that you've been saving. You've been getting that match, you know, at work. You've been stashing money away. And maybe you haven't been earning more than the overall market. Maybe you haven't been destroying, you know, the returns. Maybe you haven't been just, you know, doubling your money every 10 years like you should. You know, that is not the point. The point is, the more you save now and the more you start saving early, the better off you'll be, even if it's just saving money in cash or in, you know, short-term treasuries. If you're worried about the market, which you're right to be, because the market right now is so high. It's just so high, despite the fact that fundamentally there's no reason for it to be high. And I feel like if you are feeling like myself that, you know, it's been propped up by the Fed, it's been propped up by stimulus and measures that are coming in, and you're worried about it, as long as you're saving money, even if it's in a save, you know, a retirement savings account, or if it's in the stable value fund in your 401k, if it's in, you know, super conservative bonds or T-bills, you know, in treasuries that, you know, the safest, you know, investment vehicle, you know, out there, that's what they say, is that, you know, treasuries are the safest investment vehicle. Even if you're just saving the money, that's a step way ahead of everybody else. And I know a lot of folks listen to Dave Ramsey and hear what he talks about paying off debt. That is a huge thing to have no debt when you go into trying to go into retirement, but, or if you go into something like that has happened over the last few months. If you lose your income, if you don't have a steady source of income, then making sure that you don't have debt payments to pay off is huge, not just from a monetary standpoint, but there is value, folks. There's a lot of value in having that pressure, that weight off your shoulders, right? So if you've been struggling with that, if you'd like to get a second look at it, give me a call. We're happy to sit down. Myself or somebody on my team will sit down and go over your current situation, give you a snapshot. It's something we're offering to our radio listeners. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, and we can talk through your situation and how we might be able to help. And maybe we can't. You know, a lot of times, you know, folks are worried about coming in and you know, getting somebody that's going to sell them on, you know, something they don't need, or tell them, you know, going to lock the door and not let you leave till you sign on the dotted line. But that's not how we work. I you know, I truly believe that's why we do this show. That's a legacy that Chuck has set up with Price Financial Group. We want to make sure that you have all the information to be successful. And really, that's the only way to manage through anymore, is to have all the information that you need to be successful. And one of those informational items that I feel like I talk about all the time, and I feel like people are going to just get really tired of me saying it, but is making sure that the investment, you know, outlay that you have, the investment portfolio, the diversification that you have, making sure that what you have set up matches with your risk tolerance and your investment philosophy. You know, a lot of folks don't know, if you are particularly environmentally and socially conscious, they don't know that there are investments out there that subscribe to that, that they're called ESG, you know, investments in environmentally sustainable and good governance, right? Those investments exist. If you are particularly interested in investing in Christian companies or that subscribe to Christian values, there are funds that track Christian values. If you are making sure that you want to avoid ATF funds, you know, that's the terminology we use with alcohol, tobacco, firearms. If you want to make sure that you don't have any money invested in Europe or in Asia, or specifically, you know, in Russia, it can really help to have a professional sit down with you and diagnose where your investments are and what they're allocated to. There are also a lot of options out there. There are accounts that grow without risk that may, you know, obviously they're not going to grow as much as you could if you just, you know, went, you know, pedal to the metal and just went as fast as you could go. The potential growth in an investment like that is a lot higher, but you don't know what's out there that could be safer. And, you know, a lot of times people don't realize how easy it is to get access to that type of account. And whether that's with somebody like myself, a financial professional, or, you know, at one of these brokerage houses that will let you do it yourself, those options are available. Not everything is available without an investment advisor. A lot of times you need a financial planner or an advisor to get you into certain things, but it's really helpful to have somebody help guide you. So it can be worth, you know, taking a second look. It can be worth that diagnosis. You know, the funny analogy I use a lot is, you know, the worst performing asset that we all have, and we all do this, right? We take better care of the worst performing asset we'll ever own. And that's your vehicle, right? That's your car. It loses, what, 20, 30% of its value as soon as you drive it off the lot. And yet we get it checked up every 6 months, right? Oh my goodness, I gotta go to the dealership, or I gotta go to the mechanic, because look, my little sticker up here says, you know, I'm 5 miles past when it says I need to go get a checkup. And we gladly put money in there. And don't get me wrong, I do this too, right? I make sure, like clockwork, to take my car in to make sure that it's serviced, because I need it to run. I need it to keep going. But that's a terribly performing asset. It's something that's only going to lose value over time. So why is it that so many of us leave our investments without looking at them? Now, I'm not saying check it out every day. That's going to give you an ulcer, right? You're just going to stress out. Don't check your balances every day unless you are actively trading. If you are a trader, then yeah, you need to pay attention to your asset, to your account values, what they're doing. But unless you're an active trader, if you are an investor, especially a long-term investor, you shouldn't be looking at it every day. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't look at it, you know, shouldn't put it in there and then 10 years later check it. And I can't tell you how many people that I come across, and you know, they, whether it's the TSP or their 401k or a 403b, and the last time they looked at it was when they got signed up 10 years ago when they started work. And I don't know about you, but a lot's changed for me in the last 10 years. I mean, for Pete's sake, I have 3 kids that I didn't have 10 years ago. And so whether it's your financial picture from the perspective of the investments that you have, or it's your estate planning, or it's your tax situation, you need to check in on it, right? Your financial life is so important. Chuck used to call himself the financial doctor. And you know, the reasoning was because even though he's not a doctor, obviously doesn't hold a doctorate, the idea was you need to get a checkup. We get a checkup for our health. Well, not everyone, because not everyone likes doctors, but most folks will get a checkup every year at least, right? You go in for your routine physical. So wouldn't it make sense to have a routine physical for your financial world? And that's the nice thing. We do like to offer that, you know, complimentary to folks. So give us a call. You know, we're happy to talk about it. I can't stress enough, send me in questions to cover on the show, because I don't doubt if it's something that's been bugging you, something that's been keeping you up at night, then it's been keeping somebody else up too, right? And so they could really benefit from hearing from you and hearing from, you know, your experience. And then, you know, I'll pull in the experts, and I've got a real estate expert coming on next week. We've got a PERS expert that is going to be coming on soon. I hope we've got Michael Standard, the mortgage expert, is available for you. We're happy to send you his way. I've got, you know, we've got a lot of people that we work with that can help you out. And whether that's somebody that I work with, you know, personally, that, you know, Taylor Cattell handles my estate planning, right? So we have a network of people that I trust implicitly that we can refer you out to, right? Because, you know, a lot of times people are unwilling to make that appointment to look into that because they're afraid of what they might find. But I would be more afraid of what you don't find, right? So get your finances checked up. And whether that's with us or with the advisor you currently work with, make sure that you're opening that line of communication. That's why you signed up with that person in the first place, right? That's why you started working with them, so they could take care of you. So make sure they're taking care of you. Check in with them. Go over things. Stuff has changed in your life, right? Stuff changes all the time. So make sure you are checking that out. And even if it's just for the peace of mind, right? Because like I said, there is a value to that. Now, one question that, you know, I've gotten a lot lately, because I think that Mr. Ramsey, who I'm a big fan of, has been, you know, talking about it a lot, but the idea is paying extra money towards your mortgage. And if that's worth doing when you could be investing the money. So you, let's say you're making more money, and now should I invest it or should I pay more off of debt? And, you know, first blush, obviously, we want to get out of debt. You know, no debt is good debt. So whatever you can pay off in terms of debt is a good thing. However, you don't want that to be to the detriment of taking advantage of certain investment aspects that are out there. Now, I'm not saying if you are covered in a mountain of debt that you shouldn't be working on that first, but unfortunately, you shouldn't do that to the detriment of your 401k or your 403b. If they are matching, if you're in the TSP, you may or may not know this, you have to put in 5% to get that full match, right? If you are in a 401k that matches dollar for dollar up to 4%, you better be putting in that 4%, folks. Put in that 4%, get that free money. And then I like to encourage people also, and this is situational, so take this with a grain of salt, right? It may not be applicable to your situation, but explore getting a Roth and fully funding a Roth. Now, after you've done those things, you've gotten that money, as much money as you can go in there, now let's throw extra money at the mortgage to get it paid off sooner. And I don't say this because investing-wise, we can earn more than what you're paying in an interest rate. I don't know that. I don't know your situation. You may or may not be able to. And quite honestly, I don't know that we can when you work with me. Because I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball that works. Now, I'm hopeful. I'm confident that we can. I'm confident that there are solutions that will beat the interest rate of the mortgage. And if you have a really low interest rate mortgage, then that's great. We can probably earn more than that. But until you take, if you have big, you know, dollar amounts of money that are sitting aside, before you throw them at the mortgage, consider the compound interest rate that you could get by increasing your contributions, right? So just consider that. It's something to think about. So I think a little bit of both is where I settle on that concept. So if you have extra dollars, take half of it towards the mortgage and half of it towards saving, right? Because you want to make sure that you've got your emergency savings set up. You want to make sure that you've got your retirement fully funded, right? You're funding it as much as you can. And you also do want to pay down the mortgage early. Now, that doesn't apply to credit card debt, okay? That applies to this quote-unquote good debt. And it's not good debt, but less bad debt, right? A mortgage is less bad debt. It's not as bad as a credit card. It's not as bad as a personal loan. Those, absolutely, you need to pay down as soon as you can, because the interest rates are just so high on them. But if you have a low interest rate, long amortization period, it could really make sense to explore other options first, or at least in conjunction with paying extra towards the mortgage, right? So we want to make sure that we are taking everything into consideration. So that's a question that I've gotten from multiple different people, and that's the advice that I've given them and that I'm giving to you. If you have this extra money and you're just trying to decide whether to invest it, to put it to work in terms of a retirement plan or pay off the mortgage, I think that you do a combination of both. Now, the key term in there is not investing it like going to go out and buy stock and try to beat the market. No, no. I'm talking about making sure that you are fully funding your retirement plans, whether that's traditional or Roth or both. Then we can talk about spending some extra money on your mortgage. Now, when we're paying more money on the mortgage, then we can start talking. And once we've done all those things, now we can start talking about investing outside of those retirement plans and trying to maybe buy some stocks at a good price or trying to invest in some good funds. So if you want to explore how that works for you or just, you know, get more thoughts in depth on that, give us a call, 503-253-3000. And if you have a question that you'd like us to cover on the show, please send me an email to askbo@pfgwm.com. And with that, I'm going to take a quick break here and I'm going to be right back with Kevin Stege, the tax animal. And we've got some very exciting tax questions to answer and some thoughts that we have on, you know, just the state of things. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, It can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for making us a part of your day. If you've stuck with me so far, I appreciate you sticking it out. We are joined, as promised, by the tax animal, Kevin Stege of Baker Colson. Hello, Kevin.
Hello. I'll give my obligatory roar as the tax animal. Good to be here, Bo.
Well, you know, and I know with the changes with the tax filing deadlines and all the businesses that have been, you know, pushing out their stuff normally, and now individuals are able to push it out, you're probably just about in tax hibernation mode as well.
Oh, yeah. This July 15th, extended, you know, they extended April 15th to July 15th, where your deadline to file and pay is 3 months later. And that just kind of bumped a lot of things 3 months down the road. So we're having ourselves a little mini push here, but almost all of the clients that we have coming have already been properly extended back in April, so they have until October 15th. So it's just a pretty odd time, odd season. Keeps life interesting, I guess. Right,
absolutely. Just it's ever changing. That's what you get paid the big bucks for, right? Is to keep track of all the changing IRS code, the movements in there. So let me ask you, you mentioned people extended back properly, like you said, you know, because you guys have done a job of getting them extended before April 15th. Can people still extend their filing if they didn't properly extend it before?
Yep, absolutely. 415 was replaced by 715 for just about everything federal. Well, Oregon's a little different, but on the major things they followed. And so, yeah, if 715 is the deadline to pay any balance due before penalty and interest start accruing. So even if you do extend till October 15th, whether it was back on April 15th or whether you're going to do it now, be sure to run the calculations to see if you owe anything, or at least, you know, make some payments. Because even if you have a overpayment, you can apply that to the following year. And if you're like a lot of people, maybe you haven't even paid your first quarter or second quarter estimates because of all that's gone on. So it's not a bad way to just keep yourself a little protected. Unless, you know, 2020 is that bad, then, don't want to give the government interest-free loans.
But yeah, you don't want to give the government interest-free loans, but at the same time, if you're making sure that you're covered and not getting, you know, the penalties and interest, that's a big key that I want to reiterate, because that was something that, you know, that I didn't know years ago when I did the first time that I ever extended, because TurboTax doesn't tell you, right? So then, you know, the thing is, you do still owe that money on that date, or it starts accruing penalties and interest, right? So granted, it's not, you know, the penalties and interest aren't astronomical unless you have a giant tax bill owed, but it's still money that you shouldn't have to pay. So why not throw, you know, how much interest are you going to earn in the next 2-3 months before you actually have to do the filing that you could have earned, you know, by holding on to it? Just, you know, pay the taxes, get it done.
That's right. And the IRS is, you're making half of 1%, or, I mean, that's a good rate of return. It's probably less than that. IRS is charging 3 or 4%. So, that's a good way to keep your bill down. And, you know, one question I get fairly often is, and I'll kind of portray the worst case scenario so that the scenario makes sense to people. They're surprised that they say they only owe $500 at the end of the year, but they find out they actually had an underpayment penalty during the year. And basically, that's why there's quarterly payments. If you don't pay your taxes ratably when you need to pay them in, withholding is considered ratable. So that's it's considered all paid in throughout the year. So withholding is really good. But when you make quarterly payments, they do have to happen quarterly, or you can have an underpayment. And how that works is, and this is the concept, is say you are going to owe 20 grand of grand total tax liability during the year, mm-hmm. and you don't have any withholding, so it's up to you to pay it. Well, if you wait until, you know, December 31st and then just make one payment of 20 grand, then you come to your tax return and, hey, I don't owe anything, but oh, now there's this underpayment penalty. That's because they wanted that 20 grand spread out during the year in roughly quarterly increments. And so the tax programs anymore are all have that calculation factored in. IRS processing factors all that in. So there's no way to get around that. You really do want to pay in quarterly or have good withholding.
Right. Or in the quarterly, correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to recall you talking about it. The quarterly payments are based on when you earned money. So if you do have a seasonal business, or if you do have a, let's say you're, you know, someone's in sales, or let's use a realtor, for example, because maybe you had five houses close in July, then you made the bulk of that, you know, maybe the 20 grand that you owe in taxes, 15 of it's from quarter two or quarter, you know, then you want to be paying it then as opposed to paying at the end. So alternatively, when people say, well, I didn't make all my money till the end of the year, if that's actually a thing, then you could pay it towards the end of the year. But if you've earned it all year, they want you paying it when you earn it, right?
Yep. Well said. That's called annualizing your income, and it's an extra step you have to take, and you have to lay out your income and expense and how it really occurred by quarter, or at least that's kind of a simplified way of saying it. So yes, you can stack it in the quarter that you make your income.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I think the gist of it is just, you know, as much of a pain as it can be to pay the quarterly estimates, you know, you just got to pay them. And that's the hard thing for people that maybe a lot of people now that, you know, have been furloughed or that maybe went out on their own. If you are running a small business or working for yourself rather than a W-2 employee, you're not withholding. So you have to make sure that that's something that you know, when you start that business.
And one strategy we use is, like, say somebody's filing an extension. We have them pay a good, you know, and their tax return is due April 15th. Mm-hmm. And the first quarter of the next year is also due April 15th. Right. Well, instead of having that person pay in a quarterly payment, we have them pay in a big payment with the same payment on their extension, have it go to the prior year return so that when it comes forward from the very beginning of the year. And it just makes life a lot simpler to have a refund applied as opposed to chasing your income each quarter. You're always a little step ahead when you're bringing money in from the prior year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it I guess that's probably where it gets confusing, right? It's because it's for the prior year, even though it's not, because you're paying it in 2020, but it's 2019 payment because your April 15th is when the tax deadline is, right? You know, that's where all the moving parts come in. And to me, that's where, you know, everything that I feel like a broken record, you know, I feel like every week I'm telling people, this is why you need a professional to work with, right? This is why, you know, unless you're just off the shelf, hey, I've got, you know, I have my income from work. I standard deduction, income from work. I get one W-2, standard deduction, no nothing else. But even then, I feel like those tax softwares are missing out on different things that you could, you know, to work with a professional would make sense. But especially if you have multiple moving parts, or if you own your own business, I think it just makes a lot of sense to work with a professional, personal opinion, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to, you know, unless somebody has a rental or a business, or, you know, just a huge portfolio of investments that make, the taxes interesting. You know, those are the types of folks that I think will really benefit from a tax professional. You know, your standard W-2 can be pretty straightforward.
Yeah. You know, and that doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to be, you know, out of this world expensive to work with a professional. And I think just like we talk about with Taylor, working with an estate attorney costs dollars when you work with an attorney, but it can save you a lot of dollars down the line in terms of fixing any mistakes that might be made, right? Boilerplate stuff is boilerplate because it's applicable supposedly to everyone, but it may or may not be applicable to your particular situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's worth kicking the tires on. You know, the thing we were talking about, Kevin, in the break, we were talking about business valuations and business sales. So, you know, if you're in a situation like that, that makes a lot of sense to work with a tax professional, right? If you're selling a business or getting rid of it. I had to deal with this with my wife. She's a small business owner, and she sold off a portion of her business. And as we're dealing with, you know, trying to figure out how all that works, it you know, when we try to do it on TurboTax, there's no easy way to do it, right? You have to like Google, how do I do this? And then you go over here and how do I do that? You know, and then you're getting 15 different answers. Whereas when I started working with a tax professional, hey, it said, hey, this is what we did. And he goes, okay, you know, X, Y, Z, here you're done. Easy peasy. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense to do that.
Well, I'm glad it seemed easy peasy. Business sales are definitely one you do not want to do on your own. You want to have that baby planned out beforehand. In terms of, you know, and working with a team, you want the attorney to have the documents, legal documents tight. You want somebody who can help you get top dollar or at least a fair dollar for your business. And then the tax structure is just hugely significant how it's laid out. Are you selling shares? Are you selling assets? Are you, you know, selling goodwill? Is there going to be a non-compete? All these have different tax ramifications, and even jurisdictional ramifications. You know, if you have a business and you own the stock of a corporation that's operating and based in California, and you're an Oregon resident, if you sell the assets out of the business, that's just a California taxable transaction to the business, and now you're paying California rates, which are typically a bit higher. And I'll even take this a step further. Maybe you're not an Oregon resident, maybe you're a Washington resident.
Oh man.
And so now if you're a Washington resident, you're paying California tax on those asset sales. But if you were to sell the stock, that's a Washington sale because it's a it's not personal property. It's a intangible asset, and it's maybe not intangible asset, but it's anyway, it's subject to Washington income tax, which there is none. So you've just saved yourself 10% on your business sale just in structuring it that way.
Well, that's huge. And you know, I would imagine, you know, that has to do with, you know, when we talk about, you know, just because we're right here on the border with Washington, that people may own business interests, you know, that could be especially prevalent if you have a business interest, but you live in Washington, but the business custody is not the right word, but housed. What's the word you use for when it's domiciled, right?
Yeah, cited, domiciled.
Cited. So when the business is an Oregon business, and then you are selling if you're selling the assets of the business rather than the stock of the business, and you're a Washington resident, that's huge, right? Even though, because people say, well, it's capital gains. Yeah, but capital gains are taxed as ordinary income in Oregon, right? So that's a 10%. If you're selling for, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, that's costing you, you know, $20,000-$30,000 that you shouldn't have it cost. So that's the key, you know, that I'm hearing there, is make sure you have a plan that you've established with that team of people, right? Work with the attorney, work with the CPA.
Yeah. And that's from the seller side. From the purchaser side, you know, the purchaser typically wants to purchase assets because you can write personal property off typically in its entirety in the first year, as opposed to if you buy goodwill, you have to write that off over 15 years. And if you buy stock, you're not writing anything off.
Right.
So pretty big, pretty significant tax implications on how it's structured for a buyer and a seller.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know we've had some questions come in on that. So folks, we're going to take a break here, but before we do, if you have a question about getting your sale set up, if you want to talk about the different aspects of it, give Kevin and his team a call. You can give us a call, 503-253-3000. I know enough. You've heard, I know enough to be dangerous getting you set up with that business sale. But you definitely want to work with a CPA, and whether that's someone on Kevin's team or that's your own CPA, I would advise you to do that. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back. Kevin and I are going to talk a little bit about 529 plans, some gifting ideas if you're thinking about leaving money to your kids, the pros, the cons, the ins, the outs, just what to do and what not to do. You know, take that for a teaser. So you're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for listening. Like we said in the last segment, Kevin and I are going to talk a little bit about, you know, some strategies for saving for college or just for the future. If you have some money that you're thinking about gifting to kids or grandkids, there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's actually a lot of information out there, so it can be kind of an overload. And we have our own feelings on the different, you know, strategies to use to save in those vehicles. One of them being the 529 plan. Most people have probably heard about the 529 plan. They've heard, you know, back when sports were on. You know, every time, you know, when the Ducks or the Beavs are playing, they'll have, you know, the Oregon College Savings Plan commercials that come across the television, or you'll hear it a lot if you listen to, you know, any sort of sports radio. I know they do promote a lot on sports radio stations, but the Oregon College Savings Plan is a 529 plan that a lot of people use. And actually, Kevin, I found a lot of people ask me about it because they think that it's a huge tax deduction that they get for contributing to that 529 plan, but that's not necessarily the case, eh?
No.
that do we want to expound on that a little bit, or no?
I do want to expound on that, and it's a big expound, but we'll go back and forth on this, and you know, our friend and colleague Chuck Price, he had definite opinions on this, and I think I picked up some good info from him, and I mm-hmm. think I probably echo his sentiments. I do certainly see a different side from the tax side, and generally, in my opinion, the 529 plan is probably your third best option.
Okay.
And I'm kind of putting things in big categories here. Obviously, your best option is a scholarship. You go down that road first, which on a total side note, I will digress here. Talking with a golf pro the other day who instructs people, he said and of course this is pre-pandemic times, but he said that the easiest full ride major university scholarship out there is in women's golf. He said, give him 6 months and he will get somebody to be able to play the requisite game if they're at all interested, and can get them a scholarship there. So that's kind of interesting.
So now I know what I'm getting my daughter for Christmas this year is where I'm getting
a golf club.
And then we're, I mean, it's just really, this is completely, you know, selfish, because I just want to have an excuse. You know, I tell my wife, she said, my wife will be, where are you going? Well, I'm going to the golf course. Well, I'm taking Charlie. She's got to practice. We need to get her a scholarship. And then I'm also going to be practicing. So
that's right.
So yeah, right, scholarships or grants, similar deal, right? So if we're lumping that sort of big category, whether that's a scholarship academically or or, you know, not just sports, but an academic scholarship or grants or, you know, the sort of need based. There's a lot of need based scholarship too, right? So folks that have need, they have scholarships and grants out there. So that would be the number one. That's our number one best way to save for college or get your kids into college, right? Yeah.
Then the next is going to be the American Opportunity Credit, and that's your basically your first $4,000 that you spend out of your pocket, and if you're under the income limitations, which most people are, then that first $4,000 is a dollar for dollar credit that comes back to you, and that's that's a very good thing.
So, yeah, well, that's the word you used in there, which this is a thing that I have to drive home a lot for people that aren't familiar with, you know, the tax code, you know, is there's a difference between a credit and a deduction. So a lot of people think, well, I get the deduction. They love the mortgage interest deduction, right? They love, I want to take out a loan on my house because I get the deduction, or I want to put it into the 529 plan for the deduction, which we'll talk about, you know, shortly. But the credit, that's dollar for dollar. And correct me if I'm wrong, because again, you're coming from a, you know, a tax layman here, but a credit means I made $100,000. I spent $4,000 for college. I actually only made 96 in the eyes of the IRS, right? That's the deduction. So the credit is I get $4,000 credit off my tax owed, right?
That's right. Yep. Dollar for dollar reduction of your tax. And the American Opportunity Credit is also partially refundable. So if it runs it down to zero, you can actually get money back. So it's a great credit. It's one that really should be your first step to utilize your first dollars that you put towards tuition. And then there's the tuition and fees deduction, which is a deduction instead of a credit. You know, right. That's fine. But I kind of lump the credit and deductions in the same big category here. And so then that's what, after those are utilized, then I think you start looking at, if you still have costs, now you start looking at the 529 plan.
Sure.
And even then, you know, you put $4,000 into the 529 plan. The only tax deduction you're getting is 9% on your Oregon return. So there's a $360 benefit on your Oregon return. The federal benefit happens when that $4,000 makes income, and you pull it out and use it for educational purposes,
right,
it will be tax-free. And so it basically gives you tax-free investment to be used for college.
As long as that investment grows, right? As long as it is worth more money when you get to the college space. And as long as the big key, too, with the 529 plan, right, is that it's used for college expenses, post-secondary, you know, expenses, right? I know that a lot of people have asked specifically about, you know, what that means. That does not just mean college. That also means you can use it for trade school or for culinary school, any sort of post-secondary education, right? So, it can be a really big benefit if you're saving the money in there, and if you can have it grow over time, right? That's the benefit from the 529 plan. That tax deduction doesn't really excite me personally. You know, that's not a big deduction on your taxes. Not that any deduction is a deduction, right? I'll take it, but you shouldn't be doing it for the tax deduction. You should be doing it for the other reasons we talked about.
No. And on the federal side, we have a little break from Oregon's rules. The feds do let you use it for K through 12 education, which generally is going to be a private school, since public, you're not required to pay. But Oregon will not allow you to get tax-free treatment on the earnings. So you'd have an addition to your Oregon return. But
that's nice to know for folks that are thinking about utilizing it. Cause does that also include that penalty that, you know, the excise tax on it? So hypothetically, if I put in money for my son, he gets that scholarship we talked about. Now I'm taking out the money and using it to, you know, pay the mortgage. Then I'm going to get a 10% excise tax on that, right? Cause it's not used for school, but
fortunately not. There's two cases where the 10% penalty will not kick in. And that is, one case is where you described it.
Oh, okay.
Your allowable expenses are reduced by a scholarship.
Okay.
So you pulled it out, you used it, and then you got a scholarship. Your earnings will be subject to income tax, but not the 10%.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then the same scenario is if you pull the money out, but decide to take the American Opportunity credit, and that reduces your allowed your pot of expenses, and you still have to pay income tax on the earnings, but the 10% penalty will go away. Anything other than those two, yeah, if you just pull the money out, then not only are the earnings taxable, but you tack on the 10% excise tax.
Right, which is no fun. I don't need to be adding any sort of excise tax on there. Well, I never heard, I don't think Chuck and I ever really talked about a 529 plan, and I don't think I caught the show when he had talked about it on the air, but I personally am not a huge fan of the 529 plan either, just because I don't like paying extra. There's extra costs in there, right, that you could get that same mutual fund. Here in Oregon, the Oregon College Savings Plan is one specific that's run by TIAA-CREF, right, and then you also can use MFS's plan to get that Oregon deduction. You don't have to, that's a big key, you don't have to use Oregon's plan for it to be that federal benefits that Kevin mentioned, right? For it to grow tax deferred, for it to be tax free, as long as it's used for college. And you also don't have to go to an Oregon college, but to get the Oregon tax deduction, you have to use one of the two Oregon plans. But my problem is, if I'm paying extra to have those mutual funds, and that's what the 529 plan is, right? It's mutual funds. Then why not invest in those outside, and then you have more flexibility? I think if you've fully funded all the other things, then we can talk about the tax deferred growth. And if you're going to throw, $50,000 in your kid is two, and we've got 18 years, yeah, it's conceivably going to do some good growth. But if your child is 15, 16 years old, we've got 2 years to go. What happens if it's another COVID situation, right? Or what happens if it's just a normal market sell-off? Now your investments are worth less and you don't even have the benefit for, utilizing the 529 plan.
Exactly. And, regardless of, downturns and stuff, consider, say you have 10 grand you want to put toward education, you could do the 529, which we've talked about, or you can put it into an account under the kid's name, and maybe it's a growth account, or it's earning qualified dividends. That kid's putting it on their tax return. Most likely they're going to be in the 0% capital gain bracket, and we're tax free federal, right there. You invested in three times the technology sector ETF, and all of a sudden this baby's worth a lot of money and it's all tax-free.
Right, because they're in that lower tax bracket. Yeah, you get a lot more flexibility from the investment side without, the 529 is very limited on how you can invest it. That's a really good point too. Or, hypothetically, because this is something that I've been talking about with a lot of folks, trying to convince people that have, younger kids, not, what we were talking about, 2 years old, but somebody that's earning, money making, mowing lawns, right? If they're mowing lawns and making a couple hundred bucks, maybe making, $500 a month over the summer, and a lot of people are not going to file a tax return, right? They're going to say, oh, my kid's just, it's under the table, blah, 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 I don't have to deal with it. But if you had a kid account, like you said, that's got some earnings in it, and your kid is earning, $500, a couple thousand dollars over the summer, they file a tax return. Now you can put money into a Roth for them, right? So then you can start a Roth that much earlier, as long as they've earned income. So there's a lot of different benefits that come from utilizing something outside the 529 plan, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're kind of lumping 529s. We're talking about kind of what Oregon offers, which is savings account. I think Washington offers, and Chuck was a lot higher on this plan, but where you could kind of prepay your tuition or get a prepay and you get a credit. I don't know much about those. There's really not a lot of tax
benefit
interaction. But I'm sure financial planners know all about
them. Yeah, no, those are really great. And I know I'm a fan of those as well, especially if you're a Washington resident, which Chuck is, right? And if you're a Husky fan, which Chuck is. So if you want your kids to go to one of the Washington universities, the issue with those, and they're great because you can prepay the tuition, and I wish Oregon would do this, being a duck, right? but that you can prepay the tuition at today's prices, right? So you can buy the units of credit, you know, you buy the credits. So somebody takes 18 units and that costs $15,000 a year for right now. I'm just making up the numbers, but you can pay the $15,000 now. And, you know, college costs are just going up and up every year. So if it's net, if, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be costing $30,000. You've paid 15 for what costs $30,000 in the, in that overall, you know, cost, right? So that, but the negative is you're limited to Washington universities when doing that, right? So you have to utilize a Washington university. They have to go to a Washington university as opposed to a 529 plan where you can go to any post-secondary education, right? So I like that prepaid tuition a lot. The other negative is what happens if your child doesn't go to college, right? Or, you know, and then you're, the 529 plan has a lot more flexibility, which people may or may not know, but say, you know, they say they do get that scholarship, right? So I got a 529 plan for my daughter and I take her to your golf pro, right? Now she's a stellar golfer, which is great for my scramble tournaments too. Bring my little daughter out and win the scramble tournament. But, so now she's got a full ride scholarship and I have that 529 plan and now I can't use it, right? Cause she doesn't need money for college. I can name, you know, another child in my family as the beneficiary. I could name a niece or nephew as a beneficiary. You can change the beneficiary on the 529 and still reap the same benefits.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So, you know, it can make sense. A lot of different options out there, right?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. And here's one last fun little strategy.
Sure.
Call it a loophole, if you like, regarding 529 plans. Assuming you're already taking advantage of the American Opportunity Credit, the $4,000, you got the scholarships, you're going to do this. And, but you don't really want to be invested for a long time and what have you. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got a payment coming up, for tuition, on top of your $4,000 you're already making. Say you take, $4,000 and you contribute it to a 529 plan, on April 14th, you get your Oregon deduction, 9%. That's 4,000 times 9%. We've got ourselves $360 deduction. 2 weeks later, you pull it out and you pay your tuition. You just, in 2 weeks, you made $360, made no earnings. You're paying tuition anyway. So one of the knocks to the 529 plan is it's kind of for the upper end of the wealth spectrum. More of the affluent people tend to benefit from this because they have huge education costs, scholarships can't cover it. Mm-hmm. The tax credit doesn't come close to covering it. So they utilize this for the remainder, as a portion of what they're doing. So that's generally where I see the 529 being used. It's usually not at the lower end.
Right. Well, then I've used that, you know, we call it a loophole. I have used that before. And the key, you know, people will say, well, Bo, you always tell us if you have to use the money within the next 6 months, you shouldn't be invested in the market. Inside that 529 plan, there is a money market, or, you know, they either call it a money market or they'll call it a, you know, ultra short treasury, you know, fund. Basically, the idea is a no risk fund inside of that 529 plan. So if you're utilizing the loophole you just described, we put the money in, it goes into basically a cash bucket inside of there, and then we use the money to pay the tuition to, you know, a week later. And yeah, you only made $360, but you made $360.
9%.
I'll take that.
All right. Right. You'll guarantee 9%, right?
On the 529 plan contribution, I will guarantee the 9% as long as they're making enough money, right?
Right.
So you heard it here first. You know, I feel like it started again. Just because we brought up Chuck, now you're trying to get me to make, you know, guarantees.
That's right. For returns. Guaranteed returns. Yeah, the show's never been the same without guaranteed returns.
Well, I have to apologize.
Actually, that was probably Carl and I talking for Chuck when he wasn't on the air. I think that's what actually was happening.
That seems about right. So
yeah.
Basically what you're saying is now you are not allowed to do the show. You and Taylor are not allowed to do the show without me because you will guarantee 9% returns. So that's
probably. Chance that might happen.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place as any to, you know, to leave it for, you know, Kevin, I really appreciate you being on today. And, you know, I know the folks really appreciate your insights. If you have questions for Kevin, questions that you'd like us to cover in future episodes, send them to askbo@pfgwm.com, or you can visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and leave your question there. Kevin, if folks want to work with you and your team, how do they get a hold of you?
We'd love to take your call at 503-666-5569, or find us on the web at baker-colson.com.
Perfect. And if you'd like to get a hold of me or my team, 503-253-3000. You can drop me an email, bo@pfgwm.com. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for tuning in. You know, we hope you're all staying safe and healthy out there. Kevin and I are doing this over the wonders of modern technology. And, you know, we'll be back next week with more, you know, just titillating content for you. Just, you know, super exciting financial jargon and things. And Taylor Cattell is going to be on the show next week as well. So tune back in. Thank you for listening. God bless you all out there.
Can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.